As industrial designers, we design for mass production in terms of millions. So the implications of that for sustainability is if we make even the smallest positive increment, we have this huge positive impact on the world. At the same time, the smallest negative impact in what we do can have a huge negative impact on the world.
Enion Podcast, presented by the German Design Council. Our host, Moritz Mader, talks to experts about how to create valuable products and services.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Endion podcast by the German Design Council. Today I have the great honor to speak with Dr. Thomas Garvey, who is the president of the World Design Organization. And since the German Design Council, ourselves, founded in 1953, is one of the founding members of the World Design Organization based in Montreal, we could almost say that we are welcoming our president today here in this beautiful office in the sunshine looking across Frankfurt. And we're looking forward to speak about the role of design on a global scale, as well as the German Design Council and the World Design Organization in themselves, plus what they have to do with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. So I will just say hello and welcome Dr. Thomas Garvey, president of the World Design Organization, freshly flown in from Montreal last weekend.
Yeah.
So the World Design Organization, just to give a quick introduction, is a non-governmental international organization that promotes the profession of industrial design, is what I found on your homepage. Industrial design, many of our listeners will directly have an image of maybe hardware or designing industrial products.
Well, you know, first of all, it's fair to say people have the impression of products and services when they think of the term industrial design, because that's where we started.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back to the origins of the profession, we were basically came out of a world where people had engineering, and suddenly we realized that to really have good products, we needed to be kind of human-centered. So the industrial designer was the person who not only was doing manufacturing, mass production, materials, but with the eye to how these things are used by people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the root, that's the trunk. If you imagine a tree or the professions as a tree.
So looking at industrial design and your definition of it, it seems to be welcoming all design disciplines, which kind of might even put the word industrial between parentheses a little bit. Looking at the definition of sustainable, and also we will get to the Sustainable Development Goals of the UN, but stick to sustainability first. I once learned that it's often defined in three dimensions, which is economic, ecologic, and social. So looking at where design could have the biggest impact, is that something where you could like spontaneously prioritize the three, or would it be just as broad?
Well, let me look at it two ways. In the beginning, as designers, we learned how to design, how to make products, environments. It was all about the thing, the production of the thing. And then, as we know, it broadened to talk about people and quality of life. But the term sustainability, when it first became part of our education, was in a way a kind of subject matter. We studied materials, we studied human interface, and suddenly we were studying sustainability. And that was very sufficient for a time. But suddenly we realized that sustainability started to become the kind of air we breathe. There's a term out there, design thinking, as you know. It's that kind of thing as well. It's not the subject matter, but the way you do something. So sustainability suddenly became not a subject matter, but a principle in the way we work. So in that sense, the ecological, the economic, the social, all became part of it. Prior to that, it would have been about materials, reuse of materials, destruction of materials, manufacturing of materials, the environments, the harm on the environment. But as it became a concept of everything we do must last over time, it broadened, as you say, into these other dimensions. The thing which is really unique about our profession, if you compare us to other professions like architecture, where the product might be one or two, or in the case of housing, maybe a dozen. But as industrial designers, we design for mass production in terms of millions. So the implications of that for sustainability is if we make even the smallest positive increment, we have this huge positive impact on the world. At the same time, the smallest negative impact in what we do can have a huge negative impact on the world. So we're in a kind of position where the work we do can be so expansive that small amounts, either in the positive or the negative, have large impact. So for sustainability, that's key.
Mm-hmm.
Because sustainability is about time. It's about progress over time.
Yeah, and just like the definition of industrial design once again, mm-hmm. and the broad definition of sustainability, it becomes very hard to explain like what it actually is and what it actually does include and what it doesn't. I'd say maybe the best way of summarizing sustainable activities might be the Sustainable Development Goals from the UN. We look at 17 development goals, as many of our listeners will know. We also have a link to them in the show notes. These 17 development goals are goals that many corporates pick from to focus on maybe like their five ones that they feel they could have the most direct impact on. And the WDO is really at the forefront of working with these SDGs, so the Sustainable Development Goals, but also to work on the future of the Sustainable Development Goals, since you have like a consulting status for the UN.
Yes, consultative status. So that's the ability for us to interact with the United Nations. But coming back to the goals, again, as a profession, what we do can relate to almost all of them. You think we're designing better water, better health, gender equality. But there are some of the goals that we focus on that are far more directly related to what we do every day: industry, innovation, infrastructure, consumption. Interesting thing about the goals for us as a profession, and this is something I employ when I'm teaching, is that when we look at how we as industrial designers engage with the goals, we also have to, at the same time, have to think who else, what other professions do we have to work with to be able to be successful. So if I want to do better infrastructure, now I'm working with governments, I'm working with municipalities. If I want better health, if I want to design a better health product, now I'm working with doctors, biologists, scientists. So the idea of the goals are, like we talked about before, the tree, the roots of the tree being industrial design, and the profession of industrial design being far broader. In the same way, the goals start with something very basic, but then expand to a larger context.
Mm-hmm. You told me earlier that you are also working with your students on the SDGs. You have them pick one of the SDGs and then present to the group what their impact on this goal is going to be, plus who they will need to partner with to make that happen. Kind of sounds a bit like the minimalized prototype version of what the WDO is doing on a global scale.
Well, it's interesting because I do it with my first year students. These are students who have just chosen industrial design as a profession. As we all know, as industrial designers, they're starting by thinking, I want to design better cars and better furniture and better products that deal with in their everyday life. So by starting in the very first experience by saying, okay, but what is the impact of what we do in the broader context, I think sets a really good foundation for how they think as designers. You're quite right. So I start by asking them to pick one of the goals. They can pick any one they want. Describe how design as a profession might be able to help, not that we as a profession only can solve the problem, how they would start, and then, as you say, who would they like to work with to, as a designer, what other profession would they like to work with to begin to work on the problem.
The WDO's members worldwide on all continents, very impressive network, also in the show notes, of course, for everyone to look up, are many universities, which is a very strong war cry, let's say, towards fostering education, of course, as a tool to have a better world. Many design institutes, some of them federal, also other federal associations, and just a few corporates, as I noticed. Could you maybe highlight what the work of the WDO looks like? I mean, you travel a lot, as it seems, are originally from Montreal, where the WDO is also based since 2005. And what would your, let's say, quartal looks like 3 months in the life of Dr. Thomas Garvey?
We'll have to break that down into weeks, I think.
Okay.
But going back, so 1957, we were founded as a professional society. At that time, we only had 12 members, one of which was the German Design Council here, also one of which was the Association of Canadian Industrial Designers, but they were basically founded by professional associations. So every country has a group that comes together. So in Germany, the German Design Council brings designers in Germany together. In Korea, the Korean Industrial Design Promotion Agency. In Japan, the Japanese Design Promotion Agency. In Canada, ACID. The WDO, formerly ICSID, which was the International Council of Societies of Industrial Design, was meant to bring these national organizations together at at a global level. And it was a very kind of a very innovative and forward-thinking idea that at that time, by coming together, we could learn from each other, of course, first of all, but at the same time, we had impacts around the world. So it did start off as promotional agencies. It grew then to expand to include educational institutions, companies, corporates, as you say. And most recently, through our World Design Capital Program, we have cities. So we have city members, and so cities, municipalities, mayors come together to say, we want to work with you to make our cities better. The educational sector is currently the largest. As you indicated a little bit, the corporate sector is now also the smallest.
Mm-hmm.
But originally it was about promotion agencies. It was about professional societies of industrial design. As a result of that, or in line with that, our members are organizations. They're not people. So organizations join, companies join, cities join. Bringing it all together, we've estimated at approximately now, we have about 215 members, but we've estimated that puts us in contact with about 400,000 designers in the world today. So for example, in my case at the university, you know, my university will represent 50. Another company that joins might represent 10 designers, but in total, we're looking at about a network of 400,000 design professionals around the world.
It's a very impressive axis. And also, if we look at, maybe the way that you're working globally, coming from the nutshell experiment of having a student imagine how to access something to reduce poverty or something, or to reduce hunger, or to increase health and well-being across the world, it's a very, very interesting approach that the WDO has with their programs, like to highlight different areas of the world, really, right? The World Design Capital being one way to highlight maybe regions. Currently, it's San Diego and Tijuana, like a binational city, first time in the history. It was Helsinki, too, in Finland. Helsinki also having been the place where the WDO, or the ICSID at that time, had its headquarter from 1985 till 2005. And I read something that I wanted to discuss with you, which is that in 2012, the World Design Capital Helsinki, just as one tiny little magnifying glass thing that I found very interesting, installed a hotline for city employees to consult with a designer. And I really like that idea of giving people a way to speak to designers, because most of the times it will make things better, or at least broaden your like the way you're thinking about it.
I have to admit, I'm not familiar with that hotline, but you make me think how each World Design Capital had a particular focus which explored the idea. You mentioned San Diego, Tijuana. That example there is just the idea of cross-border collaboration. We know that, and it's the first time this designation was given to two cities in two different countries, but they share. And in fact, it's incredibly wonderful when we work with them to see how closely the people of Tijuana feel an affinity to the people of San Diego and vice versa. Many of the team from San Diego are living in Tijuana, as an example. Many of the people from Tijuana are working every day in San Diego. So it's really quite interesting that, again, each city has this kind of very unique perspective. As you know, our next one will be Frankfurt. And again, the idea of their theme of democracy, design for democracy, is such a unique and appropriate concept today. So each capital has this very unique perspective on how they approach the World Design Capital concept.
Looking back at the programs, like the World Design Capital being one of them, we also spoke about the World Design Impact Prize and InterDesign, the World Design Challenge. So very broad levels of activating communities, giving people platforms to either highlight what they have been doing or to activate others and to get in touch with others. There's also a World Industrial Design Day, which is on now. You have to
June 29th,
yes. Like the founding day of the ICSID. And
that's what it is.
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
People always ask us why in the summer. You know, if, for example, for most educational institutions, we're on holiday, perhaps.
But, okay, true.
We're celebrating the day that we were founded.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. The experiment of trying to dive deep into design communities and also societies on a broader level that might not have design access. Is very strongly felt in that way. Looking maybe, I mean, none of us can tell what the future is going to look like, but if we look at the biggest impact that designers can have, like maybe on a scale of, let's say, 2 years, since that might be a bit easier to handle, would you have like an anecdote for us maybe, like where someone did not expect to be able to influence that and it then turned out to be like a very fruitful collaboration?
Well, let me go back just a little bit. You mentioned the InterDesign. well, you mentioned World Industrial Design Day, but also you said InterDesign and the World Design Challenges. Let me speak a bit about them and how they relate. They're basically a family of programs. So in the early years, and as a student, you might recall, when you work on a design problem, you do workshops and you bring people together, and around the table, you collaborate, share ideas, and sort of sift through the best ones to achieve a result. The InterDesigns were set up, it's one of our oldest programs. It goes back almost to the beginning of the organization. And we went around the world in response to people's requests for us to come and help them to work on a particular problem in a particular community. We worked with Mexico City on handling their water. Mexico is a dry place, but they also have floods. We've worked in Russia on the production of bread. We've worked in Canada on how to develop city infrastructure. But those programs were basically an opportunity to bring 20 international designers into a meeting with 20 local designers. The idea being that local people know the context, know the problems, but sometimes are too close to it to realize what's not part of it or what could be new. And so the international perspective kind of balances with the local knowledge to get the best results. That was a program that was very successful and is successful over time, but suddenly we were hit by COVID some years ago. And rather than say, well, we can't do this anymore, we thought we need to find some digital way of doing it. The first feeling was that we might lose something by not being able to be together in a room, by not being physically present. But we realized right away, suddenly, instead of working with 40 people, one of our first design challenges, we had 3,000 people apply to participate, and we ended up choosing hundreds of them. So instead of 40 people working on the problem, we had hundreds. We worked with IBM, we worked with UN Women, we worked with the International Space Station. And that led then to what are called design talks, which are kind of miniature versions of that. And I'm trying to bring back to the original part of your question that that made me think about these programs. But you mentioned, and then of course, World Industrial Design Day is a one-day version where we celebrate all of that.
Yeah, and I'm always a great fan of anecdotes, but you already mentioned that working with Mexico City, for example, like in the drastic extreme between like a drought and a flooding, that is something where definitely many of the people, like in my closer context, speaking about family parties and explaining what we designers do, might not really expect a design team to be working. So it's very much about synchronizing globally, right? So to get in touch with people that are thinking about the same goals as we are. And what I would like to bring you back to is your attempt to explain your 3 month or maybe your week of who you're thinking with, and how do you prioritize who to speak with when the entire world is the network goal?
Well, I think we you mentioned the diversity of the board and the excellence of the board because we represent the world. You can imagine the best of every country, the best of every organization, the best of every company wants to join us. So much of our time is actually receiving and analyzing and looking at how we can help people. We obviously get more requests to do projects, to do collaborations than we can handle. So a lot of our time is spent on that. I would say that next to that, the majority of our time is spent on promotion. Mm-hmm. So involved in things like this, having interesting conversations with you, doing promotional material to talk about how design will make a better world for us all, communicating to people. And then internally, of course, we've talked about change, sustainability, the SDGs, always trying to stay on top of where the world's going, doing studies, doing research. We have a World City Design Index we're developing ways to evaluate the impact of design on the world. So working with people, fielding responses, communication, and looking at how we continue to move forward as the global network for design in the world.
You yourself studied at Carleton University, then did your bachelor in industrial design. You told me over a coffee earlier that you were starting with architecture, and then felt that there's like a way more direct way to work or to see results, and that drew you to industrial design. I also read that you have a master's in communication from Pratt in New York, and you then did your PhD at Tokyo University on micro spaces. Am I saying that right?
Minimal scale environments, yeah.
Minimal scale environments coming from space environments from your work in New York, right? Like, can you maybe just give us a quick ride through tiny spaces?
Like many like many young people who find themselves loving to draw and make models and create things, as a young person, I thought I wanted to study architecture. So I started at the architecture program at Carleton University. It just so happens that at that time, they were just opening the first year of a new program called industrial design. And here I was working with architects on projects and seeing in the studio next to us these people working on transportation, furniture, lighting, refrigerators. And the thing that excited me was their time frame of process. So as an architect, the time between your conceptualization and realization of a product can be years to a decade sometimes. Suddenly these industrial designers were having concepts and doing processes that in some cases were months, more commonly years, but just a shorter time frame. And that really excited me, and also excited me with the fact that the range of things they were doing was so broad. One I say was doing a refrigerator, another one was doing a piece of furniture. And the idea that the way you think, the way you see the world can be applied to so many different areas was quite exciting to me. So that's why I completed the program of industrial design. At the end of that, I wanted to continue my studies under scholarships from Design Canada. But in the same way I was looking at that expansion, I was realizing how much communication affects how we do our work. So that's why I decided to do the master's in communications and graphic design. Now, as part of that work for my thesis, I was contracted by the Space Studies Institute at Princeton. They were developing ideas for new ways of living in space, developing space stations, mining fuels in space, and they wanted an exhibit for people on the Intrepid Sea, Air, and Space Museum to communicate what their plans were for the future of space. So in doing that, I started becoming very interested in these programs for living in space. And worked with an architectural company in New York on some of the first proposals for the interior habitation module for the International Space Station with NASA. The space station was not yet built. They were just starting to assemble the structure of it. Humans were not living in space yet. And we were looking at analogs on Earth, for example, Arctic bases, submarines, places where people live in small-scale spaces. And we came across data where people living in Tokyo were often living in spaces smaller than would be for the space station. The difference, of course, here on Earth is you can get out and move around. But at the same time, when you're at home, how you eat, how you move, how you sleep, how you prepare your life is still within this kind of very small, confined space. So I decided to go to Japan for 1 year to do research on that to help the design of the space station work. I became so fascinated with Japanese culture and all of this, I decided to stay. And I did a PhD in architecture, looking at how we can effectively design small-scale living spaces here on Earth. That led to some presentations I made at Carleton University, which was my alma mater, and they invited me to come back and join their program as a professor, and I did that. So it was kind of a bookend thing for me. I graduated from Carleton. I went out into the world, looked at how design was broad and affected by so many different design collaborations and design disciplines, and then came back to teach industrial design to young people today.
It's in its origins very much how the entire discipline of architecture, where the architects started also making the door handles and the lamps and maybe even the furniture in the entry space, is something where the entire discipline kind of made its way out of architecture into like a broad self-standing environment that would then even leave architecture and apply its methods and its processes onto systems and ecosystems. And getting way broader. A big difference that just struck my mind between a Tokyo living space and a space station is that when you look out the window, what you can actually look at. So this perspective on the blue planet with space around it might be a lot more humbling than the next door neighbor in a gray building, maybe.
Well, you know, we talked earlier about sustainability and evolution. What's really interesting about your comment here on seeing the Earth from space. When we started developing concepts for living and working in space and moving out into space, there were two instantaneous reactions. One, why are we spending so much money? And number two, why are we not taking care of problems here on Earth first? The two questions, as I did my research on them, are very interesting because if you take the entire Apollo space program from the first machine to the landing on the moon, the total cost of that program is the same amount in today's dollars as we spend on cosmetics and golf in 1 year in the United States. The exact same program. I am sorry, I have nothing against golf or cosmetics, but we can have 1 year of that or we can have the entire space program. The other thing is, as soon as we saw the Earth from space, we realized the fragility. The sustainable movement has been there for hundreds of years. It's nothing new. But suddenly when we could see the fragility of the Earth from space, we realized how radically quick we have to protect it. In addition to that, much of our monitoring of space, Earth's resources and sustainability comes from space, space-borne platforms. If we weren't in space, we couldn't protect the Earth to the same extent that we are today. So it's really interesting that that's another example, in a way, of the idea of design opening new visions, new paths for us, and us having no idea what they will bring to us later.
I think what a really big achievement of seeing the world also is that all people on Earth had the occasion to understand themselves as one, right? Like mm-hmm. as one connected inhabitant system of this tiny blue planet that is very fragile. I was always very impressed how thin this atmosphere really looks like on pictures of the entire Earth, where you think, don't know how much it is, 4 kilometers or something, or a bit more. Always feels endless when you're starting with a plane and flying through it, but then seeing it from space, you just notice how urgent it is to be sure that we have this thin layer of protection.
The other similar vision is the fact that when we look at Earth from space, there are no lines, there are no boundaries. All these artificial separations we've created, and you can see very easily how, you know, weather or weather systems or environment impact from one country is so readily impacting another. We're all connected. As you say, that thin line is a very thin line.
I really learned a lot in our talk, like in our short minutes that we had, and I thank you a lot for your time. I mean, we spoke about the definition of design in itself, industrial being between parentheses, and how that broadens like to a huge scale of design being the impact for global improvements. We then spoke about sustainability, its definition, and also where we could impact it the most. My takeaway is that education cannot be underrated, also looking at the many members of the educative sector in your member group of the WDO. We spoke about the programs, which are all to deep dive in the show notes, and then closed with a look on the holistic ecosystem Earth that we are all having to live with in one way or another. Closing up, looking at the goals maybe of the WDO for the years to come, what do you think has the most potential to, you know, give us this feeling back of, that doesn't sound too esoteric, but as one system, and bringing, you know, like reducing differences and helping us maybe all try to follow something like the Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations?
Well, if I go back just for a minute to the fact that we started off as an organization of professionals. Then we were joined by promotional members, then educators, then corporates, then cities. My first thought is just to imagine in 10 years from now how many other types of sectors we'll be representing, which is very exciting. I think if we think about design generally, but certainly our organization, we are trying to imagine a world not as it is, but as it could be. I'm sitting here with you now in this beautiful place, looking out on this beautiful city in this beautiful weather. And there's a sense here of kind of this overview effect of a future potential. So where we'll go, we'll see. But I would love to imagine that maybe we can get together for another coffee in a few years from now and discuss that.
Looking forward to it. Thank you very much. You're also to be found on LinkedIn, of course.
Yes.
And all our interested and dear listeners can also connect with us on the known channels, which you will find in our show notes below. Thanks a million for the talk, Thomas.
Thank you very much.
This was the last episode of the Endion podcast. We'll be here soon under a new name. Under the title Design Perspectives, we will then talk to personalities from design, brand management, and architecture about a world in which transformation, sustainability, and economic success can go hand in hand. We will start with a season on the topic of leadership along the 5 largest German industrial sectors. In the first conversation with Piran Aski, co-founder of Koro and therefore representative of the food industry, we will find out how this company was able to assert itself in a loud and established market through product quality and clear brand profiling. I'm very much looking forward to all of you tuning in to Design Perspectives.